This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Hey, sports fans, it's Mason Crosby.
And Reese Crosby.
If you enjoy football, football,
be sure to check out Kicking It with the Crosbys. New episodes drop every Tuesday and Thursday.
Subscribe on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back. Chunky's coming to you live on 106.7 The Fan and the Team 980 here in the DMV. 910 The Fan, 105.1 FM in Richmond. We're streaming live on the free Odyssey app and you can watch us on the Monumental Sports Network. Brought to you by Crop Metcalf. They're the official heating and cooling company of the Junkies. Looking to be their next five-star HVAC technician or plumber? Just visit CropMetcalf.com to join their team. It's Bishcakes, EB, and JP. A little bit later, we'll talk to Mike DeCourcy, actually in about 20 minutes. He covers college hoops. March Madness is right around the corner.
I mean, Mike's been coming on our show since the weekends. Yep. He's been literally coming on our show. Now, he may or may not remember that, but I mean, he's been coming on the show for almost 30 years.
Yes. Wonder how many papers he's... I know he used to work for CBS, right?
Well, Sporting News. Is that
now,
who he's
now
with?
He's Sporting News, yeah.
I think he's been with Sporting News for a long, long time. Maybe it was CBS at one point.
Thought he might have been.
You know, I was just thinking about it. Because I was talking to a buddy of mine who was supposed to fly out to L.A. Last week, and he told me, you know, he just didn't feel like flying after all the incidents, so I think he canceled his trip. I'm flying this week to Orlando. Week after that, or 2 weeks after that, I'm flying to Fort Myers, and then I'm flying to Atlanta. So I'm flying three times in the next month, and honestly, I've gotten over my fear of flying like 15 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a little bit anxious about flying right now.
After the last few incidents.
Probably should be.
It's the first time I've been anxious since like 9/11. Like that's where I was at sort of a height of anxiety.
I mean, it's recency effect. You've seen some high profile crashes.
Well, the one
crashes.
Here in DC,
I mean, the one right down the street from us for a broadcast.
Real. To this day, I still can't even wrap my brain around
it. It's hard to comprehend.
And I'm hoping that they have that addressed. But then the one where the wings fell off, I guess, by design, and the plane, you know, where was that one again?
That was in Canada, Toronto.
In Toronto?
Yeah.
I mean, even that one is crazy.
Well,
even though nobody...
To me, that was a miracle that everybody walked away and no fatalities.
What's amazing about that is...
Shocking.
That was exactly how the plane was allegedly designed. So the wings would fall off, and you would spiral down like a hot dog, and it worked perfect. So I guess that should be a good thing. But it's just, I'm nervous flying for the first time in 20 years.
The good thing would be landing the plane without any sort of incident.
Right. Does that ever happen anymore?
That's a major incident. Flipping the plane over?
I'm sure they're you know, in Toronto, they deal with it a lot more, but it didn't look like a plane should be landing on that runway.
Right.
I mean,
with all the snow.
All ice.
It just looked like it was 15 inches of snow. Yeah. I didn't get
and
that.
It came down awfully hard.
Yeah, I don't even think it was the weather or the runway that was the issue. It was the super hard landing
that was the issue. Yeah, he just slam dunked that thing. Anyway, just something I'm pondering in my head here. We're flying out on Thursday to Orlando, but bringing the golf clubs.
Very good. I try to keep my flights to a minimum, absolute minimum.
So I haven't worried about it until now.
So we were talking about the combine being this week. Mm-hmm. Kind of the next big NFL date, which will impact the Commanders, is NFL free agency. The tampering period starts on March 10th, so we're just a couple weeks away from guys signing left and right. The official free agency period is Wednesday, March 12th at 4 p.m.
Mm-hmm.
But we know on March 10th, a lot of people will sign. And one of the questions for the Commanders is, do they re-sign D'Ami Brown? I put it up as our Surfside poll of the day. Surfside iced tea and vodka, Surfside lemonade and vodka, the perfect addition to any gathering. Each can's only 100 calories. We're talking zero carbonation. That means easy sipping. You can find Surfside at your local bars and in convenient variety 8-packs at your local liquor stores. Must be 21. Please drink responsibly. And it's, how important do you think it is to re-sign D'Ami Brown? There are three choices.
Yep.
Very important, somewhat important, or not important at all.
I'm going to go with somewhat important. I'm going to go with the middle ground there.
I think that's probably where I fall
to. Somewhat important. Here's the thing. By most metrics, was he a second round pick or third round pick?
He was a third round pick.
Third round pick.
Number 82 overall.
He's had 59 catches in 4 years. That's basically a disappointment, I think, by most account. But he has played in 63 of like 66 or 67 potential games.
He came on in the postseason. Actually, the last six games.
This year was by far his best.
Yeah. He had 30 catches, which is very pedestrian.
But that was by far his best.
He had 29 in the three seasons prior.
Right. Yeah.
So he had more in one season than he had in three seasons heading into
there's reasons.
Bad quarterback. Maybe he's not as good as
better coordinator.
Where he was drafted. He underperformed.
Maybe other guys left.
A bad fit.
Other guys got hurt.
You also have to take this into account. Maybe he just didn't earn targets from his quarterback.
But see, D'Ami
Brown wasn't getting open.
He's not going to command huge dollars.
He shouldn't.
So I wouldn't have a problem resigning him.
I mean, with the salary cap going up, I don't know what sort of offer he would get from the Commanders, but I wouldn't think it would be more than $6, maybe $7 million per season. And if it gets above that number,
that's a lot of money for a guy to
have 30 catches.
If someone wants to give him $8 million,
go ahead. Then Adam Peters has to say, well, this is getting too rich for our blood. We're going to have to move on.
Let's be real. The reason why he caught 30 catches is because Noah Brown got hurt. So he moved up the depth chart. But I will say this to defend him. All right, 30 catches, that is run of the mill. You can find basically anybody who can give you 30 catches in the NFL.
Yeah.
But in the playoffs, he had 14 catches. He had 14 catches for 229 yards and a touchdown. And actually, over his last six games.
Does that include the regular season?
The last three games of the regular season, then the three playoff games, he averaged 4 catches per game. So he had 24 catches in that span. Now, he had 2 fumbles in the playoffs, too.
Mm-hmm. Mm. So hold on.
I don't know. I don't think it's that important. I might vote not important because I think you can go out and find anybody else.
The reason why I was going to say this. So he's only had 59 catches. And I do think there's potential and all there. Like, I see big play potential with him. But him playing in 63 games is because he's a special teams contributor. He's a big part of their special teams. And I know we all disrespect it. It's not a glamorous thing. But I do think he's an important part of the team.
800-636-1067 if you want to chime in on the MGM National Harbor listener lines. Do you think it's important to re-sign D'Ami Brown?
I
don't think anybody's going to say it's important.
Just think about some of the names that he was around in the regular season as far as catches. He was right around the same number as Mac Hollins from the Buffalo Bills, as Curtis Samuel.
Hollins, the guy that doesn't wear shoes.
He's a weirdo. He never doesn't wear shoes. He wears weird outfits to the games.
He had a big catch in the playoffs.
Ricky Pearsall, who was a bit of a disappointment as a rookie for the Niners.
Well, he got shot and missed a bunch of games.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm just giving you some context.
Just give him out there.
Listen, he's not going to be a star. He's never going to be a star.
He's going to be like a third wideout.
I would think his best year, and I think he's capable of it, he could probably even do it next year, would be 50 catches.
Like 50 would be amazing.
That would be maybe...
If he did four
a game, 4 times 16 is what? 4 times
4
17.
4 times 17 is 4...
4 times 15 is 68. 60. So it'd be 68.
Yeah.
So I think 50 is a reasonable target for him. Throw in his special teams contributions. I actually think he had a long of 50. I actually think he has big play potential.
He does.
But maybe that's
his only asset.
I don't know. What did he make last year? Like, what is a guy off his
rookie
contract?
Probably not a third rounder. He probably didn't make a lot of money.
I'm surprised he only averaged 10 yards a catch.
I'm surprised by that, too. Probably made about $1.5 million, I would guess.
That's it?
Maybe two. I'm just guessing.
I think they make more than that, Cakes. If you're a third round pick, I'll double check it, but I'll just look it up. In your fourth year,
he signed a 4-year, $4.9 million deal as a rookie.
Well, then he didn't.
That's where it is.
Made 1.3 this year.
Yeah, I mean, third
rounder. But as a rookie, he made 660.
You could probably sign him for $3 or $4 million. And I think he's totally worth it.
Oh, if you get him for $3.5 or $4 million.
It's not vital, but again, like I've said the last couple of weeks, they don't have many receivers under contract.
Right.
They've got two. So you're going to have to sign some guys. Mm-hmm. You can't just pluck another six from free agency or draft. I think you have to resign at least one or two that you already have.
As long as it makes sense.
And he already knows
sense,
the system. As long as he's good in the locker
and
room.
And he's ascending. Kingsbury must like him.
I wouldn't
him.
Have a problem with
like
it.
Like, they used him when Noah Brown went down. They used him more. If you like him and you get him at a reasonable price, it makes sense. But that should not preclude them from going after other talented wide receivers.
No, it doesn't.
To add to the mix.
They need a bunch of them.
He'd be a depth guy.
Which is great.
I have no
problem with that.
I think a 40 to 50 target for him, like range of receptions, is a good target.
But if some team comes out of nowhere and offers him like a four-year, $40 million
deal.
Then
you let him go. That's fine.
That's where Adam Peters has to say, best of luck to you.
I don't think there's anybody giving him $10 million.
I think you could sign it for 2 years and $10 million, and he would sign it.
Oh, I think his asking price is going to be higher than five.
I just looked at
max 30 catches.
I just looked at a list. He's not even in the top 30 free agent wide receivers.
Right.
Here.
Maybe you can get him for 7 or 8.
He didn't put him up. He put no numbers up.
I know.
Cakes, how could he?
They've got Noah Brown 23rd. They have Olamide Zaccheaus 21st.
I'm just going by
who'd you rather have out of those three guys? Diami Brown, Brown, or Olamide Zaccheaus?
I'd rather have Diami. I think I'd rather have
Zaccheaus.
The best of those three.
I kind of like Noah.
I like Noah because he's got a little size to him.
I like explosive plays.
But I also
Diami is the most explosive of those three.
Zaccheaus is just like a...
They're all blah. They're all of them just...
I tend to agree.
Maybe Noah because he's a little bit bigger, but they're all just...
I like
you can find a Zaccheaus, a Noah, and a Diami on every
team.
But
of those three, Diami Brown is the home run hitter of those three.
Although he only averaged 10 yards a catch this year.
But he's more explosive.
I know he had the preseason catch.
Well, he had a 75-yard play in 2020. He had a 51-yard play.
Noah Brown and Zaccheaus, they don't have that in their profile.
Yeah.
The problem is he fumbled twice in back-to-back games in the playoffs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but that's unusual for him. Now, he hasn't had a lot of touches, but prior to that, he had one fumble. He had zero in the three previous
games.
I'm going to write down my offer to Diami Brown, and I'm going to slide it across to EB and see if
I'm going to be. By the way, you already put it out there. You're giving $6 to $7 million.
I would give him two years, $10 million.
Now I'm wearing my Adam Peters jacket. All right?
2 years, $10 million.
I'm not giving him $5 million a year.
You're not?
Nope.
All right, here we go. I've got the number.
I mean, you're basically going to 4X his salary.
I'm sliding it across to EB, who's acting as Diami's agent.
Three years. Yeah. Okay, that's
3 years. That's the term.
3 years, 16, 10 million. Yeah, of course I would do that.
Yeah.
I'd sign that
immediately.
There you
go. 3 years, 16 and a half million, $10 million guaranteed.
I know he would sign that. I'm not offering that.
You're not?
Nope.
This is too generous of an offer?
Not for a guy who's... You know, gives you 10 yards of catch.
I think you're going to be shocked when you start seeing the numbers come in about 2.5 weeks.
Look, I'm not saying he won't get an offer like that. I'm just saying I wouldn't do it.
Okay. By the way, you said Noah Brown's not explosive, and I'm not disagreeing with you overall, but he had a longer catch than Diami Brown this year.
I'm just talking
and his
about,
average yards per catch
Mary?
This year.
It was the Hail Mary, probably.
Has he ever had a
that's
game?
Yeah, that's exactly what it was.
Yeah, yeah. Has he ever had a game like
Diami?
He
had a 65-yarder.
It was only 52.
Tell me when Noah Brown has a game like Diami had with a garbage can like Carson Wentz throwing him the ball a few years ago. You can't because it's not going to happen with the two long bombs.
I think Diami could potentially take almost any play to the house. Like, he kind of has that potential.
He's got that skill set. Zaccheaus is more of just a tough little grinder.
Yeah, just tough grinder.
And Noah Brown is, he's got skills, but he's more like
possession.
Contested catch.
He's a more possession
bigger body.
Guy. Yes.
Like,
yeah.
Those guys are boring. Sorry.
I don't know. I mean, for the Houston Texans.
They have their role, but
for the
boring.
Houston Texans in 2023, he averaged 17.2 yards a catch, Noah Brown.
Okay.
Andy's had a season where he had...
I'm not backing off my stance. Who would you rather have? Noah Brown or Diami Brown?
I just told you I'd rather have Noah.
Hmm. All right. You run your team differently than I do.
It's close because they're different skill sets.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting to see which one of those guys, if multiple guys, they bring back.
Isaac, you're overstating Diami's home run potential and diminishing Noah's.
Look, he has a limited body of work. I mean, he has 59 catches.
I think basing it also on what he did in college, and you can scoff at it, but he was a big downfield threat in college.
Look, I'm not going to die on the Diami Brown mountain. Okay, we're talking about a guy who's at best a third wide receiver. At best, a third wide receiver on your team.
Correct.
Most likely a four. Mm-hmm. But those guys have value in a pass-happy league.
The playoff run was encouraging. Mm-hmm. The knock, Jason brought it up. I brought it up earlier. He had two fumbles. So it's like you don't want to praise him too much, but he did have 14 catches for him in three playoff games, which is not bad.
But in the three previous years, he had zero fumbles. No, he didn't have a lot of fumbles.
He wasn't touching the ball. I mean, he also fumbled.
It's hard to fumble when you don't have the ball.
Yeah, yeah.
He also fumbled in the Philly game when they beat Philly.
It's critical.
He had one regular season fumble.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can't fumble when you're not playing.
In 63 games, in 59 catches, he had one fumble.
Yeah. I mean, I'm just looking at the fumbles in the last five games. He had three in the last five.
The ultimate goal for Adam Peters is to have three or four receivers better than Diami Brown on the roster at all times.
They're going to upgrade it. If you want to bring back Diami, don't have a problem with it. I'm just not giving them 3 years, $17
million. What are you giving them?
I'm giving 2 years.
2 years and what?
Nine.
Okay, I would sign it.
Well, of course you would sign it.
I mean, you're not really fighting for your client. You're going to sign basically anything.
I might give him less. I might give him 7.5.
Hmm. I think it's fine. Age is going to ball that up and throw it back in your face.
Right. I don't know if there's going to be that many teams.
You can get better.
Knocking down his door.
Dude, I'm telling you, he
I don't think
a,
he's that hot a commodity.
I don't think he's a hot commodity, but he has a skill set. And he's a proven guy, proven special teams guy, and he proved, I think, over the last six or seven
games. I'll make a bet right now, Valdez, get the book out, that he signs a deal that averages, whether it's with the Commanders or another team, he averages $5 million a season or more on his next deal.
No, I'm not going to bet. That's what I thought. I said anybody? 2 years, 10... 2 years, $10 million.
Any takers?
I don't know the value.
$5 million or more. Jason, you don't want to give him $5 million.
I don't want to give him $5 million. He might because the cap's going up.
I think
and they
he's
got
going to sign for something more than five a year.
I'm just saying he doesn't deserve it.
I'm not saying he deserves it, but I'm just telling you that's the market.
I think he's worth.
All right, I'll take the action. Yeah, I'll take the under. Under $5 million average.
Let's go, Valdez.
Put it in the book for five bucks.
Sure, $5 bet. We're betting for $5 million. $5
inflation.
Bet.
We're ramping it up. Yeah. We might have to raise the minimum.
It's called betflation.
Hey, Valdez, new rule: all bets $5 or more.
I mean, that's prohibitive. That's going. You're going from two to
it's
to
inflation.
Five.
Inflation.
I thought we were still at one.
No. No, we had established $2 was the meat.
I'm down with five.
I mean, I went to freaking Burger King the other day and spent $9 on a Whopper.
Of course.
I mean,
did it come with fries?
Yeah. But okay. Still, $9 for a Whopper.
That's a lot.
Coming up next, we're going to talk some college hoops. March Madness around the corner. Mike DeCourcy covers college hoops for the Sporting News. Joins us here on the Junkies. Welcome back. Junkies here. Going to talk some college hoops. Mike DeCourcy joins us on the Rude Guest Hotline. He's with the Sporting News. Hey, Mike.
Good morning. How are you?
Good. Great, you know, our producer came in here and said that we were going to talk about Tony Skin. He joined us in studio last week, and man, he's an impressive guy. What do you think about the job that he's done and his future?
Yeah, I think he's built himself toward this by working at the places he's worked and doing the jobs he did. And that's not to say that what he's doing isn't still amazing. Is probably now, with some changes to some other conferences, the most difficult league in America in this sense. It's probably only a one-bid league most years. There will be years when the Atlantic 10 gets more, but there is no league that is as powerful as the A-10 is that is in that category. For a while, Conference USA, the American, might have been that league fighting sort of with the Atlantic 10 for that designation, which, of course, no one really wants. But the Atlantic 10 stands alone now. It's by far the best of those conferences. And so to be dominating that league in the way that Mason is really impressive. I am one of the people, and I don't know honestly how many there are, I have no idea, on the board of selectors, which we do the nominations, and then there's a much broader group that votes for the Naismith Awards. And Tony was, I think we were asked for 10 coach of the year finalists or semifinalists or whatever. And Tony was definitely on my list. I was a little disappointed that he didn't make the cut.
Wow.
Now, they lost a tough one over the weekend to VCU.
Yeah, did you have Ryan Odom on that list?
Did not. Yeah. Although Ryan's doing a wonderful job, and that's not a surprise because it's not the first time.
Right.
He's done great work everywhere he's been. He's obviously, Tony's a younger as a head coach in terms of experience, but Ryan's done great work at three stops now. And so did a real, you know, that was a huge win for Mason. I mean, excuse me, for VCU.
Yep.
And for them, they're one of the teams that, you know, Mason had been the clear, as I do the projections, the bracket projections for Fox Sports, Mason had been a clear first place for most of the last 6 weeks, at least. And so they were always the team that I would designate as the potential A-10 champion. And so VCU has been hanging around on the first four out list or the next four out list for all of that time. But this is the kind of game that might put them both into the field. We'll see. I have to go back starting this morning. I'll be producing a daily seed list in addition to the twice weekly brackets for Fox. And so I'll have to see whether or not that moved the needle enough, but it certainly didn't hurt.
Yeah, Mason's got four games left, two home, two away. And I was talking to Chris Caputo, the head coach of GW, about the schedule. And he said, anytime you go on the road, and it doesn't matter what team it is, it could be the worst team in the league. He said, it's so hard to win on the road in the conference. So, but I think Mason should beat Fordham at home and LaSalle at home. They got to play Duquesne and Richmond. Richmond's not very good, but if they get to, I think they have 12 conference wins now. If they get to 16, man, it'd be hard to leave them out. You know, certainly depending on what they do in the A-10 conference tournament, but I think they have certainly earned it.
Yeah, it's hard though, because with the way college basketball has changed, you know, people look at a team like Arkansas, which I think is now 5-10 in the SEC. I believe that's what the number is. But what you have to remember is how really difficult it is to win any league game in the SEC. The SEC is possibly, I mean, not like it's not Chris Mullin and Patrick Ewing in 1985, but relative to the rest of the nation in its season, I don't think we've ever had a league as powerful as this SEC is.
Right.
And they showed it on the floor in November and December. And now you're seeing teams like Auburn go out there and win consistently in this league. It's a really hard deal. And you're seeing very good teams like Oklahoma, for instance, or Arkansas earlier, that beat significant opponents from other conferences. And now they struggle to get a win against anybody in their league.
Yeah. I think they're 5-9 in the league. But you're right. The SEC has five of the top 12 scoring teams in the country. And like you said, we were kind of, you know, Alabama's one, but Florida scores a ton, and they've got unbelievable wins. They won at Auburn. Auburn, obviously, great because of what they can do, get up and down. They can play defense, well coached. You know, Tennessee, saw what they did to A&M on the road. They've just got so many legit teams. I mean, you throw in Duke as a one seed. Do you see Duke and then three SEC teams as the other ones?
Yeah, right now that's what it would be.
Right.
The only team I think that can get up there with them is Houston. But Houston's got to win more big games. That's their problem. And they start, I believe it's tonight, they play against Texas A&M on the road, and that's the kind of game that Houston hasn't won this year. They've lost their three most difficult games, which were both neutral floors to Auburn and Alabama, and then home against Texas Tech. So they have Texas Tech on the road tonight.
Right.
They have home game against Kansas on March 3rd. The rest of it's not that tough, so they might need to excel in the Big 12 tournament as well in order to contend with that group. But if they don't, I don't know who other than Tennessee and Florida is even in contention.
Mike, I'm checking out your bracket forecast for the South. You have Maryland as a 5 seed there. You've got Michigan State as the 3 seed. Those two teams linking up in College Park Wednesday night should be a massive game. The Xfinity Center, you know, some of the students have been criticized for not showing up for some of these games, not packing the place. That should not be a problem this Wednesday as Sparty comes to town.
I've been in that place when it's packed a couple of games against Duke back in the day, and it is an amazing arena when it's full and energetic, and it will be a real challenge for Michigan State, in part because, for one, Maryland's terrific. Mm-hmm. When at their best, they're terrific. They are not the best at closing, and that's something that they have to do better. And it hasn't cost them in every game where they've closed questionably. The Indiana game would be an example where they did not do a great job in the final 5 minutes, but still were able to succeed because they made the last couple of plays really well. Other than that, there's not a lot to complain about. They did not play the most difficult non-conference schedule. I'm okay with that. You know, some people in my business will criticize coaches and basically call them out for not playing a tough enough schedule. My philosophy on that has always been, and this comes from being on daily beats covering Memphis, Cincinnati, Pitt, Duquesne. You play who you need to play to get good enough to win in your conference. It's as simple as that. However you feel like you need to do that, you do that. And in this case, Maryland, with a lot of new pieces, felt like they needed to teach the guys to win. Cool. They learned. They learned how to win. So now what they need to do is show that they can win some of the toughest games. And having MSU on their court on Wednesday, it would be a huge step in that direction. There's a lot of talk, especially around the Big Ten, that Illinois is so dangerous if they get into March, even though they haven't really performed well. There has been a lot of talk. I'm not sure how much we'll hear of that after Saturday's blowout loss to Duke. But that's been a lot of the conversation. But my partner, Rafael Davis at Big Ten Network, has always liked this Maryland team and has really talked a lot about that. And this would be a great example for them to show what they're capable of doing in March.
Mike, you mentioned that Duke game. I tried to watch a lot of this game, but, you know, this game was a neutral floor. And I love the fact that there was a neutral floor game against, two power conferences this late in the year. I think more conferences should do that. But the fact that Duke wins by 45 against Illinois, I mean, not that Illinois is as good as they usually are, but that was really impressive. And it's not just the fact that Duke can score. Defensively, they're so much better than they have been in the past. They're currently sixth in the country in field goal percentage allowed. I believe it's like 36%, 37%. So defensively, they are just one of the top teams in the country. So you couple that with the fact that they can score, and they've got so many threats that can score, man, they are really, really tough.
They are, and that's it's interesting because one of the things I wrote about, we do a feature every Monday called The Corsi's Does, and it'll be published in the next few hours, just sort of a ranking of the top dozen teams, and I do a little mini column at the top of every one about something related to one of the teams. And in the case of Duke, I wrote this week about the fact that almost all their games are blowouts. I mean, yeah. it, we thought it was because the ACC is not good, and it's not. But they went out against a team from another conference that was in the first division at least, or the upper half at least, of the Big Ten, and did even worse things to them that they've been doing to NC State or Clemson, or not Clemson, but Florida State or whomever. And that was a really powerful display. And there's a lot of, I get a lot of questions from people about, is this bad for Duke? Mm-hmm. Of course, winning by a lot of points, bad for them. That's how we look at things in America, I guess. Is it bad? And it's not. They played the Kansas, Kentucky, and Clemson games and were in tight games late and needed a bucket and got the ball to Cooper Flagg, and in all three cases, he turned it over.
Yeah.
And in the third case, I thought he made a better move, and then there was a wet spot on the court.
He slipped
and lost his balance.
Yep.
And fell to the floor. I think he made a better move there and was in position to make a play, as opposed to the first two where he didn't even get started. So I think at least he made progress in that department. But if you're good enough to do this, you're good enough to maybe continue doing this for a while. And I compared them to Gonzaga, which has gone through the West Coast Conference for as long as they've been a national power, playing one or two, maybe three or four tough games throughout their entire conference seasons. And that they've gone to two national championship games since 2017 and made nine consecutive Sweet 16 doing that. So I don't think it has to hurt Duke in order, just because they have blown out so many teams and have so rarely had the experience of what it's like to be in a close basket-for-basket game.
Yeah. All right, before we let you go, you recently wrote about Pitino on sportingnews.com, and you just talked about, you know, his coaching strategy really hasn't changed. He still gets after the kids. We heard that locker room speech he gave. We played that last week, just getting after the kids, talking about getting tougher.
He just wins.
And he beats UConn pretty handily over the weekend on Sunday. And he's, you know, last year in his first year at St. John's, he won 20 games, but he lost 9 conference games. This year is a totally different team, and they're probably going to be a 2 seed. So talk about the job that Pitino has done and bringing in these kids and how, you know, it doesn't matter where he goes. If you think he's going to stay at St. John's, I got to think some bigger teams are going to be looking for him in the offseason.
Well, I would suppose that if I were Indiana, for instance, I would certainly inquire about his interest. But if I were him, would I really want to leave my home to go to Indiana and then start that program over? I'm not sure. I mean, he is 72 going on 73. I would not say that if he did that he couldn't excel at Indiana. He certainly would. But it's just a question of what does he want out of his day-to-day existence. Is there something that he could do at Indiana that he can't do at St. John's? I would suggest at this point, probably not. I think that he has shown by getting St. John's to this far, this fast, that if it's about winning another championship or another Final Four or whatever, this team may not be offensively strong enough to get him there, but there's no reason to believe that he can't put together at St. John's the sort of team that could do that.
Didn't he have no players 2 years ago? Like, literally zero?
Yeah.
I don't know if his was an empty gym circumstance or not when he got there.
Just not like it is this year, yeah.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. Like, when Mick Cronin got to Cincinnati in 06, he had literally one player on his roster, and he was a senior. Uh-huh. When Tom Crean went to Indiana 2 years later, he had no scholarship players by the time they got to day one of practice. And you can that can happen to you now, but like Kentucky is kind of in that situation. But because of the transfer portal and immediate eligibility, you can now completely revamp your roster with high major type talents, as Kentucky did, in 3 weeks, yeah. Which Kentucky did. And so it's not really the same as what those guys encountered 15 years ago or so. But it's still hard to do. You still have to put together the right players that fit together and then fit them together better once they get on the floor. And it's still a great challenge what Louisville is doing under Pat Kelsey, for instance, and what Rick is doing at St. John's. And what I'm saying is that I really believe that if he stays at St. John's, he can do the same things there that he can do anywhere, because he can sell the Garden now.
Yeah.
Because it's not just Luke Harnaseca Arena most of the year, and then we'll go to the Garden when we play somebody else that will fill it for us. And now they can go to the Garden and fill it themselves, yeah. As they showed in their last two games. The crowds got progressively larger, and the last two were sellouts. They even moved Seton Hall to the Garden, even though Seton Hall's having their poorest year in a decade.
What if Miami really wanted them? Sorry, I know we got to go, but I'm just throwing that name out there.
Yeah, I mean, I know he has a home down there and loves it there. But I think they've already said that it looks the reports have been that they're going toward Jay Lucas. So I think that probably he's already said thanks, but no thanks.
Okay. All right.
Mike, always enjoy talking to you. Appreciate it.
Good stuff.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Mike DeCourcy, college hoops writer for the Sporting News for the Junkies. Keep it here.
Time now for Chasing 895. Alex Ovechkin is closing in on Wayne Gretzky's all-time NHL record of 894 goals. The 39-year-old recorded a hat trick on Sunday against the Edmonton Oilers, bringing his season goals tally to 29 and his career mark to 882 goals. No player in league history has more hat tricks after the age of 30 than Ovechkin. Ovi scored 2 goals in a 10-minute span, during the second period and added his third of the night late in the third against an empty Edmonton net.
Oh, this he may get
oh,
it.
Oh, my
They're
goodness.
Doing him a favor right now.
Okay.
They're doing him a favor.
Number eight's already on the ice.
Yeah, they're doing him a favor.
Didn't think we were going to see to pull the goalie at three goals. Chris Knobloch not conceding anything. Okay. Alex Ovechkin on the ice. Well, the game plan for the guys in red is pretty clear, and the chant for Ovi will start here.
All of a sudden, he's got some jump in his legs.
Yes, he does. Connor McDavid still without a shot on goal today with 2:40 to go in the third period. And a puck that comes to Ovechkin. He scores! He did it! He did it! It's a hat trick for Ovechkin!
John Walton there with the call. Chasing 895 is presented by Main Street Bank. Cheer local, bank local, put their team in your office. Visit mstreetbank.com for more information. So sitting at 882 goals, the chase for Gretzky is 1,000% on.
And you talked about it earlier. You actually did some little math.
I did, yes.
Which is, and it's not your strength.
It's not my forte.
But somehow you managed to figure out that he's on a 0.7 goals per game pace.
That is
which
correct.
Is actually ahead of his career goals per game, which is like 0.6.
0.6 is his career number.
So to be doing what he's doing is insane. But in other words, the bottom line is he's maybe, 17, 18, if he stays on pace, 17, 18 games away from potentially breaking
so
this thing.
So it's likely, if he continues on that pace, that he breaks it in one of these three games. Either at Boston, I think that's April 1, at Carolina, April 2nd, or home against the Blackhawks, April 4th. It could happen in that. There's a good chance it happens in that span, depending on how he performs over the next few weeks.
Yeah. I know you're, adamant that he is the best player in DC sports history, but he's probably still not the most popular guy right now because of Jaden Daniels.
I mean, I'm not arguing. It's not a popularity contest. I'm just talking about the best player
accomplishments.
Player-wise in the sport.
Yeah. I think it's hard to argue.
Yeah,
I don't think it's close.
I don't think anybody even comes close.
Yeah.
Now, if Jaden wins a couple Super Bowls, then we might.
If Jaden wins a couple Super Bowls, we'd have to recalibrate.
That's a little different.
But, yeah, just recalibration. Remarkable. I mean, what he's doing at 39.
But the fact that the Caps are what they're doing and to come out of the break and post 15 goals against two teams that are pretty decent, especially Edmonton.
It's exciting.
And the fact that they're just unstoppable right now offensively.
I'm kind of with EB. Just start the playoffs. You don't want to peak too early.
I'm afraid of peaking too soon. Not that we have, but it's just a whole new ball game once the playoffs start. We've had expectations so many times. I'm scared to have expectations.
You assume Logan's going to be the starter in the playoffs, right?
I mean, I would assume, yeah. I mean, he's taking the number one job by stranglehold over Lindgren.
He's the guy.
And Lindgren played on Saturday?
Lindgren played because it was back-to-back.
Yeah.
It is weird, too, how goalies, like, year to year can just... That's why I'm a little bit shocked they gave him 6 years.
Like, I already forgot the guy they gave all that money last year.
Darcy?
Oh, Darcy. He's having a good year.
He's having a really good year.
Look up his number.
I know, but they just said, see you later.
It's because goalies are mercurial, man. Yeah. I mean, literally, that's crazy.
And Darcy Kuemper, he's got the bluest eyes on the planet. You just get lost in those eyes.
He's got, like, Cal Ripken eyes. Cal Ripken's got some dreamy blue eyes, too.
I remember interviewing him, and one, he's, like, the nicest guy ever. I'm not going to root against him just because he's not wearing a Cap sweater. Super nice. Dreamy blue eyes.
And we determined that we are going to ask Coach Carbs
tomorrow
because Valdez is adamant that he can't. Can he tie the record? He can tie the record on an empty netter.
Tie is
fine. That's fine.
It's acceptable. It's not ideal, but it is acceptable.
Yeah. But he can't break the record. I guess I'm leaning towards Valdez's
stance. I think
stance.
That makes sense. You don't
you
want
can't
that
break
you don't want
the
that
record.
Being your hot the highlight.
Yeah.
For breaking Gretzky's record.
So we're going to ask Carbs if he's tied and it's 7-3 or 6-3, are you going to put him out there to potentially break the record on an empty netter?
Yeah, I think I know his answer. I think his answer will be no.
Yeah.
He's not going to be on the ice with an empty net.
I mean, is that a no-brainer for him? I don't know.
I think he's going to say he hasn't thought about it yet.
I know. I'm going to say now think about it.
Right.
Because I bet he hasn't.
He might
about
not admit it, but I would guess in his heart of hearts, behind closed doors, when you're sharing a
you don't
cold
need
beer
it.
With him, he
in
would say,
in those situations,
no chance.
You don't need it. Now, what if it's this? What if it's 4-3 And they've pulled their goalie.
Yeah.
And they're, you know, they're trying to catch up.
He's just on the ice.
He's just on the ice.
Yeah.
That's different.
That's different. And he gets an empty netter. It's not like it's up 6-3. Now, would you have a problem with that one?
Yes. Yes.
So he can't be on the ice.
Can't be on the ice.
It's not great optics. I agree with all these here.
But there's no context.
The game. There's no context to the clip. The clip just exists.
Yeah.
But if it's 4-3 and they pull their goalie and during the game he's skating off to the bench and Ovi's still on, he might be able to score that way.
Well, Ovi just has to stand there.
If I were Ovi, I would intentionally miss.
He has to pass every time he touches it.
I don't want that being my legs. I'm gonna punt.
Nobody's going to care.
The puck's going to be hot potato.
I agree. People are just going to say you're the all-time. Do you remember Gretzky's when he broke the record?
No.
Do you know what Gretzky's goal was?
No.
Of course not.
Right.
You can't say that because anytime anybody thinks of stray hand, they think of the goofy sack.
I can't have
that. That's because that was.
Yes, they do.
Yeah, but that was controversial.
When you say Michael Strahan, I don't think that Brett Favre laid down for him.
I think everybody does.
I think most people do.
You guys can. I think about his incredible career.
I think about him jumping on top of a prone Brett Favre. Yeah.
Most people think phony. Phony record.
I still believe in the record, but the optics of it are not good.
Exactly. That's my entire point.
We're not diminishing his career, but we're saying
you're diminishing his career.
His record. We're diminishing that record.
No, you're diminishing his single season record.
You're
saying when you think of Michael Strahan, you think of that? Right. When I think of Michael Strahan, I think of a dominant
player. I'm with Valdez in this. 50 years from now, when people have never watched Ovi, they're just watching highlights. The highlight of him breaking Gretzky's record cannot be an empty netter.
Yes, because that's going
to
be front and center.
If you have the empty netter to break it, you have to just push it 15 feet wide.
Throw it in the stands.
It'll be interesting to see what he would do.
You've got to punt that one and just wait for a better opportunity. I'm completely with you. That cannot be the snapshot.
Well, the odds of that happening are not very high.
They're not great, but...
The fact that he threw up three last night, you know, Cakes and I were talking last week. We both agreed it was probably going to bleed into next year.
Right. This weekend accelerated.
I know,
the pace.
It definitely
big
did.
Time.
It's on. Coming up next, we'll open up EB's entertainment page here on The Fan.